Greetings and welcome to the SolarWind Energy Tower Business Development Events Update Briefing. Statements included in this release may constitute forward-looking statements. Actual results may differ materially from those projected in forward-looking statements. Such statements involve a number of risks and uncertainties, such as competitive factors, technological development, market demand, and the company's ability to obtain new contracts and accurately estimate revenues, if any, due to variability in size, scope, and duration of projects, and internal issues in the sponsoring client. Further information on potential factors that could affect the company's financial results can be found in the company's various filings with the Securities and Exchange Commission. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. A brief question and answer session will follow the formal presentation. If anyone should require operator assistance during the conference, please press star zero on your telephone keypad. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to introduce your host, Mr. Ronald Pickett, President and CEO of SolarWind Energy. Thank you, Mr. Pickett. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Brenda, and welcome listeners to our first teleconference. We had our annual meeting today here in Annapolis, Maryland. We had a number of shareholders attend, and we did a briefing with them as to where the company is today and where we are heading. And we thought it appropriate to open this up for the first time to callers and listeners so that we can update all of you who didn't have a chance to come to the meeting as to where we are, where we're going, what our goals are for the upcoming year. For those of you who perhaps have not been aware of SolarWind Energy Tower before, our NASDAQ symbol is SWET, and we have a website that has a lot of good information on it, and the address is www.solarwindenergytower.com, and we encourage you to visit that website. And on the homepage, there is a depiction of the tower, and underneath it, there is a button that you can push, and it will give you a 58-second audio-visual description of how the tower works. So if you have not had a chance to look at that, please do so. I think you'll find it very informative. SolarWind Energy is fast approaching its third-year anniversary, and we have spent these first 3 years creating an alternative energy solution that makes electricity at a cost competitive with traditional ways to make electricity that are not alternative. This is key. This was our business goal from day one, to enter into the alternative energy field and have a clean alternative solution that makes abundant, predictable power, but at a cost that is competitive with a fossil fuel-fired plant. Now, we all like to be green, and we all like to conserve. And SolarWind Energy is for traditional solar, and we're for traditional wind, but we happen to be a green solution that is very economical and makes money. When you compare the cost of our energy solution to that of other alternative energies, we are somewhere between a third of the cost to a half of that cost, and that is what we are. Was our goal from day one, and that continues to be our goal, to bring an alternative solution that's economical to the market. What we have created is the ability, the construction techniques, and all the components to build a very tall, hollow cylinder. It has a hyperbolic shape, and it's made of concrete. If you've ever driven by a nuclear power plant, you'll see one of these hyperbolic towers next to it. Those are cooling towers. They're all over the world. They're made of concrete. They're called thin-walled structures. What we have done is created a cooling tower the same way. We've just sort of made it bigger and larger and got it down to where it's cost effective. Inside or across the top of that hyperbolic concrete structure, we are injecting a mist of water. And that mist of water is very specific in size, and it's something that we've learned from our scientific investigation. So you locate this tower in a hot, dry area like southern Arizona or northern Mexico or North Africa or India or the Mideast or Chile or places in Brazil or South Africa, Australia, lots of places in the world. You locate this tower, and across the top, you inject this water. The hot, dry air must absorb the water. It cannot refuse it. The second it does, it becomes dense and heavier, and it starts to sink. As it sinks, it evaporates and cools, and it increases in velocity. At the bottom of the tower, we turn this downward pressure, and it's in fact about the last couple thousand feet of a thunderstorm is what we've created as a natural downdraft housed inside the walls of the tower. At the bottom, we turn this wind into tunnels that surround the base of the tower. You'll see that very clearly on our demonstration. Inside the tunnels, we have turbines. Those turbines are going to power generators, and we're going to make electricity that's abundant. Now, one of the key things that's happened in the last couple of years is we have obtained the patents on this system. They are not pending. We do have several patents pending, but we have patents that have been issued. We have patents for the tower. We have patents for our mechanical drive system. And we have patents for our turbine system. And let me stop and explain that just for a second. If any of our listeners have ever seen, and most of us have, wind turbines out in the field, you'll notice that they spin at different speeds, some intermittently, some not at all, and they're usually very slow turning. They are subject to however fast the wind is blowing. They also have governors that stop them from spinning too fast so they don't burn up those generators that are attached to the back of the turbines. That creates a lot of problems when you're making electricity, because every alternating current generator in the world, whether it's on your boat or in your power plant down the street, those generators spin at 1,800 RPM, and that's where they're efficient. So when you have these variable speeds from wind turbines, it makes erratic type of electricity. It makes it complicated to reposition that electricity back for the grid. Now, we've solved that problem. First of all, our turbines are spinning hydraulic pumps on the back of the turbine, and those hydraulic pumps are combined in each of the turbine tunnels where you have multiple turbines. So if the first turbine is spinning faster than the second turbine, it doesn't matter. They're pressurizing the hydraulic system. Next to that tunnel is a generator room with 11 generators. And if it's a hot summer afternoon when we have maximum speeds and wind velocities and maximum speeds on those pumps, we're running all 11 generators. On a cold winter night, when we have less speed, obviously, we may only be running one or two of those generators. But when we run a generator, it's coming on at 1,800 RPM because of the hydraulic patented control system that we have. The second thing we have is we've owned the patent on what we call drafting turbines, or multiple turbines in a wind tunnel. Now, when you drive this wind into the tunnel, it's predictable because we know how much wind we're making by how much water we're adding. It works day and night. Even though the sun quits shining at night, the hot air in the upper atmosphere is still very dry, and the tower still works by adding water to that dry air. So as the air comes rushing through the tunnels, the first turbine grabs about 50% of the energy that's in the tunnel. Scientifically, it's impossible for it to get more than 58.6% of the energy. That's just a fact. So if you think about that, it makes sense that behind that turbine now we have 50% of the energy that passes through and is on the backside of the turbine. Well, in a standard field turbine, that just dissipates and is gone, but not so in our wind tunnel. So we have the patent for drafting turbines in a row. So we have our first turbine that gets 50%, and our second turbine gets 50% of that 50%. So we can easily get 75% of the energy out of that tunnel. So those are some of the key points that make this patented system very economical and efficient as compared to any other alternative system in the world today. Now, in addition to our patents, we put together a complete development team. We've got a great company, Whiting Turner. Most of you have probably heard about them. They're all over the United States. They've been working for us for a long time now, helping us with design features and pricing and construction techniques and whatnot. We also have teamed with another partner, Commonwealth Dynamics. Commonwealth has companies operating all over the world. And most of those countries I just mentioned earlier, they have operating companies, whether it's India or Saudi Arabia or Chile or Mexico or United Arab Emirates. They are there, and they build there today. And it's wonderful to have them on board. They build cooling towers and tall structures around the world. And they've been working with us on this hyperbolic structure through their engineers and architects and giving us a price on that. So we can deliver the whole package virtually anywhere in the world for this new hyperbolic structure. And Whiting Turner, on a case-by-case basis, is even available to go and help us as an owner's representative in foreign countries. Now, the third thing we have developed in the last 3 years is what we call our energy calculator. That is very, very key to all of this. As we start to discuss our business model in a minute, we're here to enable these towers to be built and constructed around the world. Now, to do that, you have to analyze what happens when you locate a tower in certain sectors. So for several years, we had the benefit of a massive amount of atmospheric data, weather data, from southern Arizona, and that has been compiled into a program that we own. We are not going to patent that program. It's full of regular algorithms, but I can tell you that basically what that program does is tell you when you add water to certain dry air, whatever the dryness is, what that's going to do as it drops the distance through the diameter of the tower. At the bottom, then, it predicts the wind speeds on a 24/7 basis, and we can do it taking the weather data from airports all around the world and from the satellite data that we can get from the weather satellites that are now circling the world. This is a very key, important development because in the last dozen years, our world's become very, very interested in weather and the prediction of weather. Billions and billions of dollars have been spent on predicting weather and studying weather patterns. We have the benefit of that research and technology now deployed into our energy calculator. And it's such that, for example, we have one site right now that a particular developer is interested in. They give us the latitude and longitude. In a matter of a couple of days and running the computer, we can tell them how tall, how wide, how much water to put in that tower at what different times of the months of the year, and how much electricity it's going to make. Then we can take the development team, tell them how much that tower is going to cost and what it takes to build it and construct it there. That leads me to the purpose of the call today, was to describe our business model. Our business model is to enable these towers, provide the team, provide the analytical work that's necessary to analyze the sites. For example, in Chile, we announced a few weeks ago in a press release that we have given a temporary license to a group in Chile. They've spent 9 months now, having been through 12 agencies in Chile, and we were pleased just a couple of days ago to get the coordinates for their site, which we're finalizing right now, to support that. We hope that the government of Chile gives final approval for the tower, and we anticipate that we should hear something fairly soon to that result. Our business model is to upcharge a license fee for a territory. So, for example, in that part of Chile, this group has a temporary license. If they execute it to go forward, then they will owe us a one-time license fee. They will owe us an annual development fee, which includes pre-construction services for the tower, and there's a menu for those. And then once the tower starts to operate, we get a royalty for 20 years on every kilowatt hour of electricity that's made. Our royalty fee is 3/8 of a penny per kilowatt hour. It's a small amount of money, but it's a big tower and it makes a lot of power and produces a lot of revenue stream for that fixed 20 years. Estimated someplace in the realm of between $12 and $18 million a year is the anticipated royalty off a typical tower in one of these sections. After the 20 years, they have a buyout provision or they can extend the license fee for a COLA increase. Right now, we have announced already we have groups in Chile and India that are working with a pre-development license and working towards the full development. Since that announcement, we've been contacted by multiple companies in South Africa, reps in Saudi Arabia, another African country, not in South Africa, but in Southern Africa, Brazil. And, of course, we've been working on Mexico for some time. You recall that some of our announcements, we refer to Arizona, and I talked about it earlier. Arizona breaks away from our standard business model a little bit. We've been pursuing a site in Arizona. We have it under contract, and we'd like to take that site further along so we can attract a final developer for that site, and we can retain an interest in that project. That is outside our regular business model. Our regular business model is only for license fees, development fees, and royalties. In the Arizona situation, we want license fee, development fee, and royalties, but we also want to retain a piece of the project, so we are actually getting the entitlements done under the umbrella of solar wind energy. In closing, before we take questions, I believe, our company believes that our stock is very undervalued. And we'll talk about that for a second. In the last few weeks, we've begun to tell the story. We are prepared to tell the story now. We've got our ducks in a row, so to speak. We know what these things cost. We know where they can be built. And we've got initiatives under the way. So we want to get that story out and make it clear to the marketplace. We recently have been going to meetings. I've spent some time in the last couple of months meeting with investment clubs and doing some public speaking. We've started a series of study press releases. We intend to continue that. I get questions about the stock price, and the stock price is very low. It's at a penny. And it's concerning, but it's not disconcerting. It's there for a legitimate reason. The financing, we were delayed about a year in our business plan getting all of this together. That extra year, we've had to take in what we call short-term convertible notes, which are six-month notes. And we borrowed that money, and at the end of the 6 months, they convert into shares. And then those lenders are not particularly interested. I mean, they like the company, they wouldn't have made the loan, but they're really interested in getting their money back. So they turn around and sell the shares. And those are the shares that are available on the market today. The legitimate shares. It's not these, quote-unquote naked shorting or anything. They're very legitimate shares for sale because those lenders are simply getting their money back. So do not be alarmed by the volume of shares in the market. They're legitimate. They're real. There's a real reason for being there. I consider that just an opportunity for people to pick up shares at a quite unbelievable value when you think of all the work we've done and where we are sitting in the marketplace today. We are on track. Our goal right now is to increase our shareholder value and to close our first deal. I get questions about revenue. It'll take years to build a tower. You're years away from revenue. Not so. Our company will be cash flow positive on the first tower project that we sign up. The very first license agreement we sell will put us cash flow positive. So we do not wait for the tower to be constructed for us to be profitable. So, we'd like to take a few minutes right now and open this up to questions and be happy to address anything on your mind and welcome your questions. And thank you for tuning in and listening today.
Thank you. We will now be conducting a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate that your line is in the question queue. And you may also press star 2 if you would like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. Once again, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad if you wish to ask a question at this time. And our first question comes from the line of Robert Green with CTL Ventures. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, Ron. In one of your pieces, you had put out something about that year-round, the amount of electricity generated from each turbine, each structure, would be something, I can't remember the number exactly, but I think it was like 485 megawatts per hour per day on average.
Yes.
Something like that. And since I'm not into these terms, I didn't know. Is that a big deal? Is that a small amount?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's a great question. Thank you. Our tower will generate about net of internal uses for pumping, et cetera, about a little over 400 megawatt hours per hour on the average per day. Now, that's 24/7, 365. And to understand that, that equates to about 4.3 million megawatt hours of power that you can sell to the grid. If you sell it at 10 to 11 cents, which is avoided cost, say in California, much higher in other countries, that's $450 million a year of revenue. Now, if you equate that to other solar or alternative energy projects, you have to be very, very careful because that's the net saleable for the year. That includes hot summer days and cold winter nights. Now, when you, for example, let's take, and I love this project, but let's take the Ivanpah solar project in California that costs $2.2 billion and says it's 380 megawatts. Well, it's 380 megawatts of solar power only on its brightest hour. It's not at nighttime. It's not in the early mornings, late afternoons. So when you equate their year-round production to our 4.3 million megawatts, it would take twice that facility. are about $5.7 billion and 10,000 acres of solar panels to equate to our tower. If you did a wind farm, it would be the equivalent of 100,000 acres of traditional wind turbines to do what our tower does. Our tower makes roughly half the power of a traditional nuclear power plant in this country. These power plants, nuclears, do vary somewhat, but most of them are 2 500-meg reactors, and this is at 430, just about the same as one-half of a nuclear power plant, enough to power a city of 700,000 to 1 million people. That answer it?
Yes.
Thank you. Thanks. Good question. Great question.
And our next question comes from the line of John Lichtenfield, who is a private investor. Please proceed with your question.
Hi. I have a two-part question. First part is, what are the water requirements of the tower? And then the second part, following up on that, is most of the locations you mentioned are, you know, relatively dry, desert-type areas. So,
right.
You know, what is the water supply situation?
Yes, thank you very much. The water requirements vary from day to day and hour to hour. It is safe to say that we recycle and recapture at the bottom of the tower a whole lot of this water and recirculate it again. Now, we have, for example, a project in Arizona right now that we're working on, and that land is currently being farmed. And they have wells on the property, and they are irrigating that farm with the well water. Our tower will use less water than is currently being used to irrigate those crops on that farmland. And all of the water that is not recycled is restored back to the earth because it comes out as cool, damp air that's evaporated and absorbed back into the ground. Now, we don't always have fresh water available like that. Even when we do, we still have to clean it to get the particulates down to where, you know, works inside these nozzles. So in foreign countries, for example, Chile, that water would be coming from the Pacific Ocean. In the Mideast, it'll be coming from the various gulfs there that have high salt and salinity contents. We take the electricity from the tower and use that power to desalinate the salt water and use the fresh water, then recirculate it, recapture. And in some instances, some of the proposals include taking the potable water after it's run through the tower and using it locally for potable purposes and then desalinating 100% of the water through the tower. But that is factored into the net saleable amount of electricity in the pro forma. So in all cases, we have the need of electricity that we're producing to desalinate water or clean water and then to pump it up to the top of the tower. We then recapture what we can, either reuse it or sometimes it's restored into a potable water system. Does that answer that, John?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Good question.
And our next question comes from the line of Dev Patel, who is a private investor. Please proceed with your question.
Hello, Ron. My name is Dev, and I have a question regarding the effect on wildlife. We know that the traditional wind turbine does kill many birds.
Sure.
In this case, I don't see how it can kill a bird. However, when water is sprayed at the top of the tower, and it sinks in, right away it becomes dense and sinks in, doesn't it create some kind of a suction effect such that if anything is flying up there, it's going to literally be sucked into the tower?
Well, the answer is technically yes, it does create a suction, but it's a straight down suction. It's not sucking from around the tower. You have to understand that the mass outside the tower is huge compared to the inside of the tower. So the velocity of the suction is minor. I mean, a bird could fly over the tower without any problem at all. Birds can light on the side of the tower. They can sit on the side of the tower. You know, the tower doesn't have anything that's going to kill a bird going by. It is a good question. We faced this with the Audubon Society in one of our first public hearings, and they understood it and had no objection to the tower. We were very pleased that the only environmental impact that we have is the actual ground cover that we cover. You could have different species on the ground that, you know, might have to be removed or rehoused or maybe moved from their environment to another similar environment right next door. But we have zero emissions. We're, you know, 100% carbon free. and we pose no threat to anything in the environment other than maybe some lizards that might be on the 50 acres or 80 acres that we're covering.
Very good, sir. Thank you.
And ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, if you wish to ask a question at this time, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Our next question comes from the line of Robert Green with CTL Ventures. Please proceed with your question.
Ron, the various countries that you say are now contacting you with interest, that's interesting and leads me to ask you this question. Do you see that it's going to be governments, foreign governments, that are basically going to be our customers, or are is it going to be private groups of investors that want to put up these towers?
Thank you. I see it as all of the above. For example, in the Mideast, if we get good traction there, those are sovereign governments, you know, but they don't charge for electricity, they give it away. So they're interested in how many barrels of oil and cubic feet of natural gas they save, what's the longevity of the project, et cetera. So that definitely would be either, you know, a sovereign entity or local utility of a sovereign entity that would be doing that. Now, in other countries, we expect private developers and or utilities to be involved in it. In Mexico, we're anticipating private development. In Chile, private development on land from the government. In Mexico, we're looking at probably land from the government. So it's a hybrid. In all cases, the government gets involved because of the entitlements that you need to do it and the various permits and whatnot. But I don't see many of these situations being government-owned per se, but I see the government having a role in the cooperative effort of getting them done.
Okay. And secondly, you mentioned the Arizona project is a one-off in that you're doing all three. You're the licensing fee, the annual development, and the royalty, but plus you're retaining a piece of the ownership.
Yes.
That sounds pretty good to me as an investor in the company. Why not do that worldwide?
Well, Bob, that's a great dream. Our business so far has been a small, lean company with the best consultants we can find, and we're simply not staffed for that. We need to get our first deal or two done, and I'm not saying that forever that model will stay the same, but this is going to get us traction. This is going to get us multiple towers going at the same time, and we're not limited to our resources. And I personally think this is a good plan for where we are today. If I had a great big brother wanted to do something differently with us, we'd certainly entertain that. But right now, we got a I call it crawl, walk, run on our own, and we're sort of getting from the crawl to the walk stage right now.
Okay, so then what led you in the Arizona project to keep a piece of the ownership?
Well, because in the Arizona project, we have, in order to build our energy calculator and to come up with all of the engineering and costs we've done, we had to have a specific site to start with. So we have spent millions of dollars on that site, and that equates to value into the project, which we don't want to just give away for a license fee. We want equity out of that. That's different from the people in Chile doing all of the work down there, and we're simply going to run the calculator for 48 hours and or 2 days and then put our team together to reprice that for them. They can build that with someone else if they want. Just give us our license fee. So it would be very aggressive for us to say we have to participate in the ownership of every tower right now. In my opinion, we're just not capitalized and staffed for that.
Okay, I also think it would go. It's an easier sell if you're not going to take a piece of the ownership to these various entities around the world that are looking at it.
I agree. I think we can get a bunch of deals. It's going to take a little time, but we're right on track, and the response has been overwhelming. We are having difficulty keeping up with the responses right now, and this is a lot of work for us just to try to get back to these inquiries, and then we have to vet them, and they have to vet us. You know, there's a lot of work just in doing that, but this is a real solution. It's a real deal. It's a game changer. And once the first deal is put together and the due diligence is done so that that is going to get built and they know it's going to get built, we're going to have to staff up because they'll be beating the doors down, I think, to get licenses for this.
And can you give us an idea of these towers as you build them? What does the bottom line mean to the company? Is there
Okay.
some formula that
Yeah.
you've already worked out to tell us how much income in general would come into the company
Okay.
per tower built?
Well, for example, one Mideastern country, their minister asked us specifically to run a pro forma for them, and they gave us a location. In discussions with them, we set the following parameters for the pro forma. We used our Arizona tower. We didn't modify the tower for them. We just stuck it on their location. Their location was 30% drier than the Arizona location. We factored that into it. We didn't change our pricing model. Our pricing model is based on union scale labor rates in the United States to build this. Obviously, their labor rates are vastly lower than that. We did not change that, and they asked us not to change it. They then asked us to tell them how much gas we would save, they would save, and what the cost per kilowatt hour was, with the full capital cost amortized out over 25 years. We ran that pro forma, and we got never higher than 6.2 cents a kilowatt hour. And after 25 years, with at least 25 years of life still left and the project paid for, a 4 cent per kilowatt hour cost of electricity 26 years from now. At the same time, we were saving 45 billion cubic feet of natural gas a year that that particular country owns, produces, and could sell. So that becomes quite a compelling financial story. Now, if you take those numbers and equate them to, let's say, the United States and Arizona with a regular 20-year amortized mortgage at, let's say, 8%, which probably is high, but that's a very, certainly a believable number. After operating costs, we believe that after servicing the debt and operating the tower could throw out at 10 cents a kilowatt hour sale somewhere in the neighborhood of $200 million a year, just cash flow, net positive cash flow. There is no alternative solution in the world that can do that. Now, Bob, lots of countries won't care about the cash flow. They just want the power, or they want that solution. But those are the kinds of numbers that, from a straight business standpoint, stand behind this and make this such a compelling solution, which is why we are involved, which is why 3 years ago we set out to do this only if we were going to have good positive cash flows and a profitable alternative energy solution. At any time that that was not the case, we would have stopped. That we're not interested in making another 18 cent to 20 cent per kilowatt hour solution for the market.
Well, that was a great answer, but I clearly did not express myself correctly. What I was thinking is not what's in it for the government or whoever's putting up the tower, but what's in it for the company.
For our company would be, for example, in the Mideastern quote that I just told you about. In that pro forma was $18.5 million a year royalty for us. It was our
Right.
$2 million upfront fee, $2 million a year, plus when the tower was operating for 20 years, was $18.5 million a year cash flow to us as our royalty. And I think
Okay.
somewhere between 12 and 18 million a year is what we can anticipate as our royalty per tower, long-term recurring revenue, 12 to 18 million a year, and that's just free flow cash to us after the tower starts running. Does that answer it?
Yes.
Okay.
And you said the life of the tower is how long again?
We're saying 50 years because of the concrete and rebar in it. It's kind of like a bridge structure, a concrete bridge. They say 50 years. We got a lot of them in New York that are 100 years now, but you got to say, you got to put a life on it. Nobody believes more than 50, so that's what we start with for it. We depreciate
Okay,
it.
so
Yeah, a lot quicker than
so
that if you like.
so the annual development fee, is that significant?
$2 million a year.
A year.
Yes.
Okay.
So one tower deal, and our company is cash flow positive. Just from a license fee and development fee.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And our next question comes from the line of Dev Patel, who is a private investor. Please proceed with your question.
Hello, Ron again. Ron, I was wondering, in all this, why is our own government not interested? Have you approached the U.S. government? for funding a tower, for example, the one in Arizona.
Ben, is it Ben? Is that right? When we first started, I had meetings with the Department of Energy in Washington, D.C. And it was, we did not have any patents yet, and we had a plan to develop this. And there were some potential grant monies available, and we had to go through a process to get them, but there were definitely monies that were out there that could be had. The problem, we discovered that if we took them, we would jointly, the U.S. government would jointly own the IP and the patents and everything that we developed. And we chose not to go that route. After that, we have, when it comes time for the first tower in the United States, it is not unlikely that we may ask the Department of Energy for some sort of loan participation or guarantee. We've discussed that with them. That's certainly something that you can only decide when the time comes and what the political environment's like and everything else. So that's one of those things in the future to be discussed, but there's really nothing the government can do along the way other than that. We're not looking for, we're not manufacturing, we don't want grants or anything like that, but we might ask them for a loan guarantee depending upon who the final developer is in Arizona.
And in Arizona, if the water is going to come from the Sea of Cortez, that's 40 miles away.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, originally we had looked at that and programmed it, but we have an alternative source for the water there now.
I see you do. Okay. And Ron, just one last question. At this rate, without any solid contract in hand, how long will the company continue operations without revenue before you throw in the towel?
Good question. We've been 3 years so far, and we don't anticipate any change in our MO right now. We have plenty of sources of borrowing capital right now, we'd like to stop doing that when we can, but we will do that as long as we can. We recently announced that we have an equity facility in place for $3 million. We'd like not to access that till the stock repositions itself to a higher valuation.
I see. Okay. So indefinitely at the moment, right?
Yeah, we don't plan on going anywhere.
Okay. Here's a real funny suggestion. Ron, I know this is not tested with a prototype. There's a lot of scientific backing to this theory that it should work if you created a tower 2,250 feet. Why don't you test it out with something that's even taller, the Burj Al Khalifa in Dubai? It's a hot place. Rent out the elevator shaft for the day. It could go down and figure out if it really works.
Well, the problem is there is no hollow core to the Burj Khalifa that we could drop some water down. That's the problem. But I would take it a little further. These are not theories. The scientific backing to this is known science. For example, to sort of put it in perspective, we all look at Doppler radar when we watch the weather station at night. And that's been developed in the last decade. And Super Doppler has the fine measurement of two Doppler systems colliding and measuring the density of air, which is how much water content's in it. And it's reflected in different colors, the greens, the reds, et cetera, et cetera. What's happening in the tower, Ben, is the inverse of the science of Doppler radar. So if you don't believe Doppler radar is telling you the truth, then you don't believe what's going on inside this tower. But if that is, in fact, what's happening, we are recreating that science. We're recreating what is known to be measured, nothing more than that. This is not willy-nilly spraying water up there. It's going into fractions of microns in a very defined area, in a cubic meter area. And it varies depending upon the dryness of the air coming in. So this is a predictable flow. Is it 100% predictable right on the nose? No. It's going to be within 5% or though. And that's fine for these kinds of numbers. So it's not a mystery. It's a known science we're dealing with, and we can build the tower. And the reason this wasn't built years ago was they couldn't build the tower. They couldn't build this big a structure 30 years ago. But we can build it now, and we have the team that has been put together to guarantee to build it right now.
Very good. And earthquakes would not be a problem to this structure?
Now, earthquakes are an issue in every structure today, no matter where we are. You know, we used to think of earthquakes being confined to, you know, San Francisco or something, but, you know, we just had one here in Virginia a couple of years ago that we had tremors to North Carolina, and they one in Charleston that shook the whole East Coast, you know, 100 years ago. So earthquakes, you always have to design for that. But we can tell you that this large hyperbolic structure is the best, and I won't say it's easy, but it's the simplest design. It's called Architecture 101 for earthquake design. And the actual compression of the weight of the distribution on these footings is far less than a skyscraper sitting in San Francisco. So all of that's been dealt with the engineers, and it is not a problem.
Thank you, Ron. I have a lot of faith in your company, and I hope you succeed. Thank you.
Thank you.
It seems we have no further questions at this time. Okay. I would like to turn the call back over to you, Mr. Pickett, for any additional comments.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Brenda, for hosting this, and thank those of you who are on the phone today. It was, as I said earlier, the first time we've done this, and I don't just for legal and SEC purposes, we want to make note that this is does not create an obligation for us to do this every year when we have a meeting or at any particular time, but we will consider from time to time opening the discussion up like this so we can bring as much information to our shareholders as possible as we do what we believe we're doing right now is move forward from the development stage company to actual development company. And I thank all of you for your support. Good night.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this does conclude today's teleconference. You may disconnect your lines at this time, and thank you for your participation.